Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 232. And we just finished the Ten Commandments, or the Ten Oracles, actually. It's not the terminology is not the Ten Commandments there. And later on, that terminology was given, especially when people began to translate it to other languages. But in the Jewish community, those who speak Hebrew, those who read it in the original, they never call it commandments, they call it the Ten, by the original name, as it is recorded in the Bible, Aseret HaDibrot, in other words, the Ten words, oracles, proclamations, and that's in essence the way God labeled it, and He's the one that gave it this name. It is Moses that recorded that, and it was for a specific reason, you see. Later on, down the road, 2,000 years ago, 1,500 years later, the Savior of mankind, the Redeemer, the one that just spoke all these instructions to His people, terms of the covenant, He came down, and He was known as the Word, the Oracle, you see, of God. And so, whatever proceeded out of His mouth, as He said, you know, man shall live by every Dibra. Now, that's probably the word that He used when He said it in Hebrew, when He spoke to His people. Every Dibra, every word, every oracle. You see, He could have used the word commandment, He did not. Because whenever God speaks, it is a commandment. God does not suggest. He doesn't say, well, if you please, you know, depending on how you feel about it. You see, everything that proceeds out of His mouth, that's understandable, it is a commandment. And so, you can see the link there between the two. And therefore, He is the one that inspired this terminology to be given. And as I said, when languages began to change, obviously, and people began, you know, the children of Israel began to speak other languages, they began to use other terminology. And, well, in the process, when we do it, we are losing the original intent. So it's important for us to remember, as Christ would put it, in the beginning it was not so. Let's understand how it was meant to be originally, and what's the purpose behind it. And so He's giving Israel, His wife, His bride, you see, in spite of her problems, and the constant bickering and complaining and so forth, which He have never stopped to this very day, that was His wife, that's His people. He never rejected them, no matter what. In spite of all the lies, you know, of people, and many of us unfortunately swallowed those lies, and are still afflicted by them to this very day, and think that, you know, we know better. Israel remained His wife, and He gave them this ten. And obviously, that was meant also for all mankind. It's not only for one particular people. This is for humanity, which are going to become the children of this marriage in the future, as they were meant to be in the past. But Israel never fulfilled her responsibility and commission to be the light of all the nations of the earth. And so He gives them ten, and He begins the first. You know, as many understand, there are two divisions here. Basically, the first four are oracles, teachings, proclamations that relate men to His Creator, Israel to her husband. You see? And so they're directed in that way. And so the division is there is very clear. The first four have to do specifically with God. And so He began the first four by saying, I am, you see, I am Yehovah, your Elohim, nobody else. And because I am, don't have anybody else. And when you understand it also in the context of marriage, it becomes very obvious. If I am the husband, then you should not have other lovers beside me. You see? And so, this is how He addressed it. And then when He began the second set of instructions, which have to do between man and his fellow man, He began with a similar command. Honor your father and your mother. You see? And don't have other fathers and other mothers. In other words, don't go to others and follow their path and their teachings, which is contrary to that of your parents. And obviously we're speaking about the righteous teachings from the parents. And unfortunately the reality is when people depart from that, though their parents are the ones that begot them, gave them life, you see, they turn away from their father and mother and go to others and take them as if they were their parents. And instead of being followers of their parents, followers of their culture, of their religion, of their teachings, of their mind, of their nature, of their inheritance, and so forth, they become the children of others. And that's contrary to the will of God. And that's why God placed the responsibility on the parent to be the educator and the teacher of his children, and to be the idol of his children, or the god of his children. You see, both of them, father and mother. And to transmit all the instructions that God gave the parents to the children. And what you find out, you know, as the priesthood began to forsake their responsibility of teaching these very things, they began to replace the parents with themselves. So now they began to be called fathers. And people began to look at them as such. You see, Adam was a son of God. Adam was not the son of an angel. And yet, when Adam and his descendants, especially his descendants, began to depart from God, they began to worship angels. And those angels happened to be demons. And some of them maybe were, you know, worshiping even the true angels, you know, the holy angels of God. As to this very day, there are people who worship Gabriel, Michael, and others. You know, that they're those angel statues and figurines, and people wear it around their neck. You know, worshiping angels, as Paul would say, which is a demonic state of mind. Our Father is our God, you see. Jesus Christ is our Creator, and He's also our Father, you see, because He's the one dealing with us. And that's one of His titles also, the Everlasting Father, because He created us, He fathered us. But in relationship to the Father, the one that sent Him and He became His Son, you have a father-mother relationship. Well, the Father, God, is our Father, and Jesus Christ becomes like our mother. He's the one that is washing our diapers, you see, and nursing us and educating us until we are, you know, He's fully formed in us. Not until somebody else, you know, one of the angels is fully formed in us. And so God structured the oracles, the teachings, the proclamations, the commandments that He gave to His children for all, you see, not only His people Israel, but for all mankind, is to see it this way. Ultimately, our Father which is in heaven is our Father, no one else. And of course, Jesus Christ is of the same mind and nature. And then our physical parents are our parents, and it is to them that we should look for instructions and guidance and direction. You see, and follow in their footsteps, they give us life. But when the priesthood began to neglect their responsibility, well, things began to disintegrate, and people looked to somebody else to be their father, their role model. And you see the society today that is geared deliberately to function in this manner. That parents have the children, make the children, feed the children, nurse the children, ache with them, rejoice with them, go through all those trials and tribulations, you know, at the beginning of childhood, and then shortly after that, they go to the kindergarten or the preschool, and those teachers over there become their parents. They have them longer than their own parents do. And so they influence them and they affect them. And the society also takes over. And the idols out there in sports and movies and here and there and everywhere. And their peers and so forth, they become the parents. And so pretty soon the mind and the heart of the child is being alienated from the father and the mother. And they do not want to follow in their footsteps. A lot of children, they would rather listen to the teacher and respect the teacher more highly than they respect their own father and mother. You see? And so it goes in many areas later on. And by the time they are teenagers, you know, they think that the parents are old fogies, they don't know anything about anything. And the role models out there are smarter as far as they're concerned. The teacher is smarter, and the sports idol is smarter, and the movie, you know, and idol is smarter, and the rock band, you know, are smarter, and so forth and so forth. And they do not honor their father and their mother. You see, there's a total breakdown there in so many ways. And men, willfully, under the guidance of Satan the devil, has restructured the society in such a way that children would not be followers of their parents. You see? And would honor others. But God made it very plain in the 10 oracles. After me, call no man a father unless he is your father, your physical one. That's in essence what Jesus Christ was saying. And so that's what he said in the last command that he gave, or teaching, or an oracle, proclamation that he gave to his people Israel, which is to this very moment and until his coming. He said, I'm going to send you Elijah the prophet because you're all messed up. And he's going to restore the heart of the fathers to the children, the heart of the children to the fathers. Obviously, as we mentioned earlier, physically and spiritually, the spiritual fathers, the fathers of Israel, you see, and the personal parent, father and mother of every person in Israel. And he said, if you do not return, in essence, I'm going to bring utter destruction on all of you. And that's the reason why we find this set of instructions here between man and his fellow man begin with this oracle, with this command, with this teaching. And how many of us are in this category? How many of us are obedient? How many of us look to others as more important than our own parents? How many of us do really honor our father and mother? Why do we have a Father's Day and a Mother's Day once a year? And do we worship God once a year? Do we honor God once a year? Do we think of Him only once a year? You know, we spend special time, you know, travel from one end of the continent to the other only once a year to be with our father and mother. That how, you know, how are we close to our Heavenly Father? You see what happened to all of us? We've all become transgressors and victims at the same time. And so God wants us to return to the way things used to be, as He meant for them to be. Now, of course, in between, a lot of things happen, and parents are not what they used to be, and they don't have the information and the knowledge and the understanding and the wisdom. They may not be even of the same religion that we are, and so forth. But still, the reality remains to the degree that we can, where it's not contrary to the will of God and to the law of God, we should spend much more time returning to our source. We have to return first to our source, that is God Himself and His teachings, instead of those of others, and then return to the source that gave us life, through whom God chose to bring us life. Otherwise, you know, we would not have been even alive. And so, that's the reason for these two segments here. And God gave this to His people, and these were the terms of the marriage covenant between God and men. And we cannot say, well, you know, we worship God, we love His law and all that, but, you know, I don't know about my dad and mom, I don't care much about them. That's a part of the covenant with God. If we forsake that, we break one, we broke them all. And so we have to take it very seriously, especially for those of us who still have parents. And many of us don't. And we haven't done a good job, you know, while we were being raised properly in honoring our parents. But for those who still do, you know, there is still a time there and a place to turn around. And as God said through Malachi, be restored to our parents, to our fathers, and to the spiritual fathers of the faith, you see, and ultimately to the Father of all, the one who is in heaven. And that's the reason why when Jesus Christ was looking around, you know, He was seeing people honoring the teacher, you see, the people that call themselves the teacher, more than they honor their own fathers. You see? It was a breakdown in the society even then. And He told them, don't call any man a father. Nobody deserves that title. You see? And He went even further. Don't call even anybody a teacher, because there is one, and He's in heaven. And yet people like to be regarded as such, to take over, to come in between, you know, the triangle. That's in essence what Satan has been, and the devil has been doing all along. So he can be our father, so he can be our parent. And we followed him most of our life. And many still do to one degree or the other, even among the people of God. And we have to remember that our Father, our God, is a very, very jealous God. You see? Jesus Christ, the husband of the bride. Now, you know, the marriage has not occurred yet, but in the future, is a very jealous lover. He does not tolerate anybody in between. And this is a part of the command there. In honoring father and mother, we are showing God also how faithful and how loyal we are to His marriage covenant and to Him. You cannot have one without the other. And so this is basically what He's saying here in the entirety of it. You see, people who honor their father and mother and follow in their footsteps, that's assuming that they are righteous and walk in the ways of God, then I'm going to commit all these evil transgressions that are mentioned in the next six oracles. And I'm going to murder because I'm going to think, look, if I'm going to murder, I'm going to bring shame on my father, on my father's house. I can't do it. I'm going to grieve my mother. You see? I cannot do it. And I cannot commit adultery because then I'm going to bring, you know, a bad name on my family. In the old days, and still there are many societies where people would shy away from evil because they are, you know, fearful and afraid and ashamed of dishonoring their parents, the name of their parents. And people would commit suicide. Many places, many societies still today, people would literally commit suicide when they bring shame on their parents. And the Middle East, you still find those places where they will, you know, would kill somebody that committed adultery in the family because that brings dishonor on the name of the family. You see, all that comes from that, honoring father and mother. And people would not steal because that's going to bring shame on the parents. And they're not going to bring false witness and so forth. In other words, they're going to uphold the honor of the parents. And when the parents have a good reputation in the society, in the community, among the family, they will do everything they can to maintain that. You see? Not to become the black sheep. And so let's understand then all that when we are studying the 10 oracles. What is it that God was aiming at, and what happened to society in contrast to that, and why we are where we are today? And try to do our best in this direction to lead our children as much as possible into this understanding. Because they still have parents. Many of us don't have parents anymore, and it's too late for us in that sense, if we haven't done it properly before. And so these are the 10 that God gave them, the 10 oracles, Aseret HaDibrot, you know, in Hebrew, and in the feminine form, Dibra. And it's interesting, that's the only place where this terminology is used, you know, this term, Dibra, you know, the feminine word. Generally, the word when you see this word, Dibra, it's only for the 10, and whenever it's not for the 10, it is davar. So in every statement that you see in the Bible where it says the word of the Lord, it's davar Elohim, you see, but only for the 10, the word dibra is used. And God made it very specifically, that's the way He wants it to be called. And people change it for commandments because they're also commandments. Not that it is wrong to say commandments, it's just we have to understand what is it that God was conveying by using specifically this terminology. And that's the reason why He told Moses, you tell Israel, look, you know, this is the law of God that I give you. Do not add to it. Don't alter it. Don't pervert it. Don't think that you know better. You're smarter than your father. Don't add to it. Don't diminish. Well, that's what human beings do by nature. They add and diminish. And so we read here in verse 15, after that, all the people perceived the thunderings and the lightnings, in other words, they saw all that, and the voice of the horn, speaking by the shofar, and the mountain smoking. And in Hebrew it says basically, you know, the voice of the shofar, in English translated the horn, it's not the trumpet. You see, when you say trumpet, you think about, and people are confused about that because they begin to change and alter and add and diminish. They're all mixed up about that. A lot of people think, you know, there is a feast of trumpets, and they think about the trumpet that we play, you know, for music and tap and things like that, and that's not it. That's talking about a shofar. You know, the feast of trumpets doesn't mean the feast of that kind of trumpet, Hatzotra. It's talking about the shofar. And so, they heard the voice of the trumpet, that is the shofar, and the horn, in Hebrew, that's the correct translation for it, not trumpet, and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they trembled and stood afar off. And they certainly were not going to touch the mountain, got really scared. That was a part of the reason God wanted to, you know, have these little children, you know, that's what they were, in behavior and conduct, rabble-rousers, always griping, you know, and complaining and murmuring and all that. And this is not an adult behavior. He wanted to put some fear, you know, healthy fear in them for this relationship and for the oracles that He just gave them, not to take it lightly. So you can imagine that, you know, the little children, you know, they hear all these teachings, you know, they cling to their parents, you know, that's their father and mother, and they certainly are going to honor them at least for a few moments or maybe a few days and listen to their instructions instead of being rebellious. And the adults would do likewise with their own parents, and all the other things. And you see, God is beginning to develop a consciousness in them of understanding the structure and the way of thinking and the nature that they should develop. Total obedience and reverence and worship of their Father in heaven that just spoke to them. In specific, that one who became our own Jesus Christ. Of course, at that time, most of them did not know about the ultimate Father in heaven. And also, they developed that consciousness among themselves to begin to honor and respect one another and not behave like rebel rousers. And so, they were so scared, and they said unto Moses, speak you with us. You know, I was talking like little children. You know, they were so afraid. And so, you speak to us, you know, because, you know, obviously, when you're speaking, we're not fearful and trembling, and we're not scared to death. You speak to us. Instead of growing and learning and understanding, no, this is our God. He didn't come to kill us. He loves us, you see, and he showed us his glory and majesty. We should develop that love and reverence toward him. They develop their own concept toward him. It's like people who worship idols because they fear them, not because they love them. They were scared to death that they would kill them or destroy them or not bless them and so forth. And so being idol worshippers at heart, that's how they reacted. You see, they were afraid, you know, those experiences that just they went through. Instead of appreciating them and rejoicing in them, yes, trembling, as Moses himself said, you know, I tremble and fear as he was experiencing the power of God, but at the same time, reverence and love was developing there in respect and honor. And this, the children of Israel, unfortunately, didn't have at this point. And so they trembled and they said, you speak to us, and we will hear. But let not God or Elohim speak with us, lest we die. Now, all these things that he had done for them so far, none of them died. So why do they think they're going to die? Well, this is not an irrational mind that thinks here, you see. But because of their idol worship and their experiences in the past, that's the way they felt and that's the way they reacted. And the question is, had they not behaved in this manner, had they not said to Moses, you speak to us, you know, just like the nature of all of us to this very day, to one degree or the other, we want to see God. And so we make one in our image and likeness, be it the minister, the priest, the teacher, the monk, the mullah, whatever religion people are, that's the way we function. You see, they're all modeled. We want to see them. We want to see our gods, you know. But a spirit being, awesome, powerful, mighty, you know, we don't want that. You know, we're afraid of that. That's an irrational way of thinking. That's a person that is not in tune with God, but with his own idol worship mentality. And so had they not said that, there was no reason for God to speak, to stop speaking to them. That was just the beginning. You see? They were not interested in listening to their God. A lot of people today are not interested in listening to God. And that's one reason, and they don't realize it. That's one reason they say, I don't want to hear about the law of God. Yeah, just talk to me about sweet, nicey, nice. You know, faith and grace and, you know, love, joy, happiness, you know, things like that. Smooth things, you know. I don't want to hear, you know, the law of God because they feel that immediate tension there. And they don't like it. They don't even realize why they don't like it. As Paul explains it, the reason for it is because the physical mind, the carnal mind, which Israel was full of here, is an enemy of God. You see? Why is it an enemy of God? Because they are lovers of idols. That's why they are an enemy of God. You know, they immediately feel that tension when God comes and speaks to them and exposes them for what they are. You see? And with his sword, he goes very deep and exposes everything they cannot hide. And when we walk in darkness, naturally we don't like to be with God. We feel uncomfortable. You see? So I said, the carnal mind is an enemy of God. It is not subject to the law of God. And if we have this attitude against the law of God, that's the reason. We are carnal. You see? Like idol worshippers. We have darkness in our minds and our hearts, and instead of, yes, trembling and fear before God, but also reverence and affection and love and rejoicing in the fact that here is the Supreme King of the universe, and he loves us and he cares for us and he speaks to us, and so we are drawn to him. Instead of that, we draw away from him. And that's exactly what the Israelites were doing here. That's exactly why many of us do not love, do not like, do not desire, do not hunger for the law of God. They want to hear men speak, you know, and his opinions and ideas and concepts. And that's the reason why people go to services, you see, oftentimes to hear men, you know, who is going to speak today and so forth. They do not come to worship God and totally give themselves to God and totally open up before God without inhibitions and restraints and honor Him and glorify Him and sing before Him and dance before Him and delight their souls before Him. They don't come with this in mind. You see, they come with abundance of reservations. And they're willing to give just a little bit, you know, barely opening their mouth, some people, to sing to God, you know, just fulfilling their duty. And then, you know, let me out of here. I don't want to hear it anymore. You know, close the Bible, that's enough. 2 hours, oh, that's all I can take. Let's get out of here. Now, that's the attitude of the carnal mind. And that's what the Israelites were going through. And so they said, we don't want to hear God speak to us anymore. We don't want to hear His law. We don't want to hear His words. We don't want Him to expose us for what we are. And that's exactly what they were saying. And so they were saying to the people, Moses said unto the people, don't fear, fear not. For God is come to prove you. He wants to test you, see what you are made of. Not that He doesn't know what He is, what they are. And that His fear may be before you. You see, in other words, you're going to walk by His fear, and therefore you're going to behave yourself and obey these teachings instead of being rebel rousers and continue to complain. So He wants to plant His consciousness within you, His nature within you, His mind, His spirit. Why are you resisting it? Well, as you read in John, when people walk in darkness, they do not like to come to the light because, you know, the light blinds their eyes and they don't like it. So they want to go back to darkness where they feel comfortable. And that's who it is with many of us who have resentment, natural resentment, without even realizing it, against the law of God. We don't want to hear about it. And so, we read in verse 17, Moses said unto the people, fear not, for God is come, that is Elohim come, to prove you. You know, He came directly right to you here, a few feet away from you, to prove you. Instead of rejoicing that God is so near, here it is, the God of the heaven and the earth, look how you behave. And so that His fear also may be before you. Why? I mean, does He want to terrorize you just to make you fear Him? You know, does He enjoy it? No, that you sin not. That's the reason for it. You see, when we are not afraid of God and reverence God and honor God and love God, we are not afraid to sin. You see, that's in essence what it is. So He was beginning to develop that consciousness in them to link, you know, healthy fear, healthy reverence with unwillingness to do evil. And they were not willing to listen to that. And so we read verse 18, and the people stood afar off. You know, they even went backward. They were not interested in coming close to God. And that's how the false prophets of God, supposedly, you know, they call themselves prophets of God, but when they're false prophets, they always go backward. They don't fall forward before God and prostrate themselves before Him to worship Him. And the people of Israel as a whole went backward. They stood afar off. But Moses, in contrast to them, think about it when you read this, in contrast to them, he who experienced that because he was closer to it, he was on the mountain there, and he even went up there, you see, he drew near unto the thick darkness where God was. And that's the difference between us converted and unconverted. The converted ones draw near God, and He draws near to them. They're not afraid. You know, as awesome, as glorious, as majestic, they may tremble, you know, because we're physical human beings, you know. But we also show reverence toward God and love and desire to be in His bosom, to have Him right inside us, His mind, His nature, His character, His personality. So we draw nigh to God. And so these words are not written here, you know, without cause. That's to make us understand. What is the reaction between people who do not fear God, who do not shy away from doing evil, who do not walk in the light, but rather would rather, you know, walk in darkness, that is? Well, they go back when they hear the word of God. They don't want to hear it. It exposes them, it shames them, it humiliates them because it exposes them for what they are. They don't like it. That's the reason why a lot of people now meet do not like to hear the law of God. You see, and they think, oh, that's old stuff. That's Mosaic. I'm a New Testament person, not an Old Testament. That's the way they regard it. You know, those are Jewish laws. Who wants them? That's for the old days. I just live by faith alone. You see? That's the reason for that carnality. Hatred of God. And they can kid themselves all they want that they love God. And so Moses, in contrast to them, he drew closer to God, not away from him. And he went into the thick darkness. It was darkness for the people. You see, but when he got inside, it was light. And so since they were not willing to see God in his glory and light, then God, in essence, symbolically, is covering their eyes with darkness. You know, because when people do not have the love of the truth, later on you read, God sends them delusions, so they would believe lies. In other words, he in essence, relegates them to darkness. And so you see, this darkness here that God surrounds himself with, it's not to hide from them, it is because they are hiding from him, and therefore they're not going to be able to see him if that's the way they feel about him. And he's not going to expose himself to them if that's the way they feel about him. So, you know, all these things that we see here, they're all symbolic of a state of mind of the people of Israel. Had they not been that way, it would not have been a dark cloud, but a bright one. You see, where they could see the glory of God. And so when Moses goes inside the dark cloud, then he sees the brilliance and glory of God. And the Lord said unto Moses, thus shall you say unto the children of Israel, you yourselves have seen that I have talked with you from heaven. You see, a lot of people don't understand the scriptures when they read it because they have no wisdom in them and no understanding, no context, no background. What does it mean I spoke to you from heaven? He was not in heaven. He was in Mount Sinai. He descended on Mount Sinai. He didn't speak to them from heaven. A lot of people say, well, Elijah went up to heaven. That means we all go to heaven. What does that mean? See, every time you take off the ground, you are in heaven. That's all there is to it. That's what it means. And so when you're on top of the mountain, somebody is at the bottom of the mountain, he's on earth, and you're in heaven. Yeah. People don't understand this terminology, and so they get confused. You see, it's dangerous to study the Bible when you have no eyesight. But as a blind person, you're going to stumble and fall, and would not understand what you're reading. And yet most people do that, and they come up with their own doctrines and ideas and religions, and they do not comprehend the truth. See, the dark cloud surrounds them, and they don't see anything. They think they do. And so he says, I spoke to you from heaven. I mean, it's from the top of the mountain. You shall not make with me gods of silver or gods of gold. You shall not make unto you. And the reality was, tragic reality, many of the Israelites were carrying those gods with them and worshipping them and continued to do so for 40 years and sacrifice to them. As God told them through the words of Moses later on, that you were sacrificing unto demons, not to God. And so they were not willing to listen. That's the reason why they drew back. That's the reason why people don't like the law of God. Because they've got goals of silver and of gold, so to speak, in their hearts and their minds. And so I said, don't do it. Verse 21, an altar of earth you shall make unto me, you know, in contrast to the kind that you had in Egypt, and you shall sacrifice thereon your burnt offerings and your peace offerings, your sheep and your oxen, in every place where I cause my name to be mentioned. You see, if I don't do it, don't build an altar there for me. And whenever Abraham or Isaac and Jacob built altars wherever they traveled, it's because God appeared to them there. And so he caused his name to be there. But otherwise, they cannot do it. And later on, God chose only one place. First, Shiloh. You see? So when it was in Shiloh, you couldn't go to Jerusalem. And then it was Jerusalem. And when it was in Jerusalem, you could not go to Shiloh. You see? And then King Jeroboam, when the division of the kingdom occurred, he said, I don't need to go to Jerusalem. I can make one right here in Bethel, the house of God. After all, it was good enough for Jacob, our father. It's good enough for me. You see? By that time, that place was not holy anymore to God. You see, even though it was Bethel once upon a time, it used to be. And some people don't realize that. When God walks, you follow him. When the cloud moves, Israel has to pick up and follow the cloud. You see, they cannot say, well, you know, God used to be here, and it's good enough for me. That's how people invent their own doctrines and teachings. And that's how they function to this very day. And they do not understand. That's why it says in Daniel, only the wise shall understand. And there aren't many out there, unfortunately. And so it says, the place where I will play, in every place where I cause my name to be mentioned, I will come unto you and bless you. And if I haven't called, in essence, a certain place to be my place, I'm just not coming there. You can go to Bethel all you want. And Jeroboam not only had one in Bethel, a golden calf in Bethel, but he had one in Dan. Why did he have it in Dan? Because when he studied the story of the book of Judges, and you remember the story about Micah, who came to a certain house there and became a priest to him, in the house of Micah, it was not Micah, but that Levite that came there in the book of Judges, that later on the people of Dan that went up north, they in essence kidnapped him and kidnapped all the gods of Micah and went up there to Dan. That man, even though the Jews tried to camouflage that because of the embarrassment, that man was a grandson of Moses. You see? And so they said, well, you know, this is the grandson of Moses, and it's an important place, and God, you know, was a God of Moses, and Moses talked to him, therefore, God certainly is going to be you know, with us here. Well, God doesn't look at it that way. And that's the reason why later on Jesus Christ said to the woman, the Samaritan woman, John 4, you know, the hour will come where you will neither worship God in that mountain of yours in Gerizim or in Jerusalem. You see, because God is going to remove his name from there in terms of worshiping God, but you're going to worship God in truth and in spirit, you know. Wherever God is going to call, on people to worship him, this is where they can worship him. Then later on, when God is returning to Jerusalem, well, obviously, then Jerusalem again will become the center of humanity. But not until then. Even though his eyes are upon that holy mountain, and he still calls it holy mountain, you see. And very soon there is going to be a little temple there built. But this is the principle here. Unless God is there, you see, I mean, he's the star of the party, you know, don't waste your time going to another party. He's not going to be there. And so he says, verse 22, and if you make me an altar of stone, you know, later on, you shall not build it of hewn stones. In other words, don't use any weapon made of iron or whatever, metal, on it, because those are symbolic of war or destruction. And so I said, don't do it of hewn stones, for if you lift up your tool, you see, and in Hebrew it doesn't say tool, it says cherev, sword. And it was translated to tool, because the meaning was, it could be either a sword, and obviously you don't take a sword that you kill people with and you break stones, you know, you take a chisel and you take this and that, that's why it was translated to tool. But the word he used was cherev, and a sword comes in different shapes. He says, if you do that, you have profaned it, you see? And that's the difference between a holy and a profane. If you do not do it in accordance with the instructions of God, it's not holy. It's profane. And God would not accept it. And so it says, verse 23, neither shall you go up the steps unto my altar. Why? That your nakedness be not uncovered thereon. In other words, if you go up on steps and it gets a little bit windy, you see, people are going to see your nakedness. God didn't want that either. He wanted total reverence and respect when people come before him, properly attired and dressed. And that's the reason later on in detail, the master tailor, God, told Moses what kind of clothes the high priest should wear. You see, everything was in detail given to Moses. And the high priest couldn't go to Paris and shop for, the latest style and whatever goes around, you see. Can't look into magazines and do those kind of things. Only what God gave them, that's what they had to do. And so that's what he's saying here. And there was a purpose for everything. And after giving Israel these instructions through Moses, which obviously later on he recorded them in the book that we were just reading, God continued the conversation. In other words, Israel doesn't want to hear me. They don't want me to speak to them personally. They're not desiring to come into the light. Therefore, I'm not going to speak to them. And that's, in essence, the way God made it plain to his people to this very day. You draw nigh to me, or near to me, I will draw near to you. You depart from me, I'm going to depart from you. And so what we see here, why God is speaking now directly to Moses and not to all of Israel, which he intended to. He didn't come on Mount Sinai only to give the 10 oracles, but he was going to, in essence, recite the whole marriage agreement and the laws and the covenants and the statutes and the judgments and the precepts. They were going to have a long day there, you see, with their husband. But they were not interested. The bride was not interested in that marriage and made it very plain shortly after. You see, that's why the golden calf came there, because they were idol worshippers at heart, in spirit and in mind. And so now God is, in essence, because of that, you don't want to talk to me, so I'm not going to talk to you. And so it was later on with Jesus Christ. When the multitude were agreeable, you see, he spoke to them. And at times when he saw a lot of rabble rousers there, then he just, you know, drew apart and took only his own disciples, and he went to a separate place, and there he spoke to them. You see, just like you read in the Sermon on the Mount, you know, he took his disciples, and then he went apart to a mountain, and there he began to teach them. That's exactly what is happening here. People that draw away from God and are coming with a, you know, wrong attitude, well, God obviously does not want to talk to them. And so he's giving all these things to Moses when actually he wanted to give it directly to Israel. And so he begins here with the judgments in chapter 21. Now these are the ordinances or judgments in Hebrew, mishpat, for judgment. And from that comes shofet, which means a judge. So these are the judgments which you shall set before them if you buy a Hebrew servant. Now mind you, who is speaking? Who is giving the instructions? So people call it, well, that's Jewish stuff or that's Mosaic stuff or whatever it may be. You see, it's God. It's Elohim. It's their father. It's their husband. It's the one that became Jesus Christ. You know? Some people like to say, well, you know, these are Christian principles speaking about teachings in the New Testament, but they would not apply it to what they read here. Why? Because they're blind and ignorant. They think they know better. This is Jesus Christ speaking here. Paul made it very plain. And Jesus Christ is sitting down here and is teaching us Christian principles, doctrines, teachings, laws, commandments, oracles, anything, you know, that it may be called by. This is the same person speaking. And so it's not that he came down later on. You know, some people say, well, here's Jesus Christ. He came from his mother, you know, this, from his father, that is, you know, this smart aleck. And he's, you know, he's changing his father's commandments. Well, he's speaking here in person. That's his own commandments, his own teachings, which obviously are the same as if the Father himself would have spoken them, you know, the same mind and heart. And so let's understand that. We're sitting at the feet now on the Mount of Sinai of Jesus Christ, like on the Mount, as later on you read in Matthew 5. This is the Sermon on the Mount, the first one. The second one was the second one, you see? And some people think, no, that's the first one. And so we follow those. But this is not how blind and ignorant people are. So when you say, I don't want to hear the law, what are you hearing? What are you saying? I don't want to hear Jesus Christ. I want to worship him, but I don't want to hear him. I don't want to listen to him. You know? You forget all about it. I'm a New Testament church. And so forth. You see how blind and dark people are. Jesus Christ is speaking here. And he's saying to Moses, if you buy a Hebrew servant, years, he shall serve you. And in the seventh, he shall go out free for nothing. And he would say, well, they just came out of Egypt, and he brought them out of the house of slavery, and he proclaimed liberty to all of them. How do they end up in slavery again? Why is God instituting slavery in Israel as a part of the marriage covenant? What is happening here? So a lot of people don't understand that. Because people are not responsible, as they should be. Not everybody is responsible, especially when you talk about the people of Israel, you know, the mentality of slaves. A lot of people to this very day have the same mentality. They're not responsible people. So, who's going to take care of their kids or their family? They're not responsible. That's the reason for slavery. But it's not slavery as we have known it, you know, 100 years ago in this land or in other places. That's not the slavery God is talking about. He's talking about service. You see? Today, all of us are slaves. What does that mean? We have a job. And we serve our master, our employer. We're slaves just like you. This is what he's talking about here. And so the slaves in those days, they couldn't make it. They couldn't, you know, bring the, you know, I wouldn't say the bacon, you know, but, you know, the beef home, you know, unless you use beef bacon. They couldn't do it. So they went and got a job. That's all it meant. And in the job, they contracted for a period of 6 years. You see, actually, it was a certain period of time, and after that, you know, they could go free. So God was regulating labor laws. And that's in essence what it is. An eved, or in slave in English, is the same word for a worker. And so when you go to work, you see, even the work of God, you know, the quote-unquote, the work, it's called avodah, means the work. And so eved means a worker. And so when people later on, you know, the servants of God called themselves bond slave of Jesus Christ, that's what they meant, a worker of Jesus Christ who are doing his work, the work of God. And it's not the other concept of slavery that you find in the world. God did not allow that concept into Israel. And so let's understand what slavery is all about in Israel in contrast to that which is in the world. Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point here and continue next time. This is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people.